Adam Rainey, Al Jazeera, Rio de Janeiro.
Became known as the Underground Railroad, a network of people and safe houses that helped American slaves escape to freedom in the 19th century. And the railroad led to the town of Buxton in Ontario, Canada. As John Terrett reports, it's a legacy which the town still celebrates more than 200 years later.
Brian, Sarah, John, Jack,
the Prince family wearing white,
Luke, Tyler, Jason, that is the whole family clan,
take on the Brookses in orange at the annual Buxton homecoming, their descendants of former slaves.
Go, Jackie, go, go! Woo!
Shannon Prince says it's a legacy she wears with pride.
I'm very honored and very proud that I'm able to continue a wonderful chapter in the Underground Railroad legacy that they have started.
The Underground Railroad was the name for a network of people and safe houses that helped slaves get to freedom. It stretched from the Deep South to the northern U.S. states and on into Canada. Buxton was started by an Irish clergyman who once owned slaves himself. The Reverend William King is seen as a visionary for the way he helped former slaves integrate among sometimes skeptical Canadians.
They had to have so much crop per year. They had to have a garden. They had to have a house that fit a certain standard. They had to send their children to the school, and really he was trying to establish a strong community.
The escaping slaves knew they were safe when they saw the Union flag flying above Canada, British territory where slavery was already abolished. Some of these graves here in Buxton stretch back over a century and a half to the earliest days of this settlement. Now, although the numbers vary, the official government estimate is that at least 30,000 people crossed over the border from the United States to find their freedom here in Canada. The annual Buxton homecoming attracts people from all over Canada and the USA.
I think it's great to know that people could get free by some way and not just stay in slavery forever.
These Florida school children read a book in class about Buxton and wanted to see it for themselves.
It was a blessing that Canada helped the slaves get over to Canada, Buxton, and just be free from all the slavery and all the beatings.
A lot of people would like to forget about the history of slavery. Buxton was born because of slavery, and now the community is showing that it's overcome and has moved on. John Terrett, Al Jazeera, Buxton, Ontario, Canada.
Thanks for listening to Al Jazeera English on the Radio, broadcast exclusively by the Pacifica Radio Network, free speech radio.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is just about 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, they live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. One did live on. We'll be right back.
And, of course, this is Off the Hook, hosted by Emmanuel, also joined by Mike.
Hello.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Kyle.
Hi, buddy.
Dot Rhett.
Hello.
Voltaire.
Hey.
Jim.
Hello.
Bernie S. down in Philadelphia.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
And special guest Mitch Altman.
Hello.
Where are you back from today, Mitch?
I actually came from San Francisco, but via Burning Man, via Berlin.
Uh-huh. Okay. Wait, is this the same Berlin that we just came back from the camp last month?
Yeah, I was there for a month. Uh-huh. I love Berlin.
Okay. Well, that beats us. Anything new to report in the hacker space world or hacker hardware world or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, lots of exciting things. You know, the hackerspace movement continues to, like, take off in leaps and bounds. And, you know, hundreds of them around the world spawn a lot of enthusiasm, which make other people want to start them because that's the way they start, is individuals like us start them. And, you know, I'm going to Africa to do a three-day hackerspace at the Maker Faire Africa. And
Maker Faire Africa.
Yeah, there's a Maker Faire in Africa. This will be the third one, and just sort of serendipitously, it'll be in Cairo.
Uh-huh. Now, is this a mini Maker Faire or is this a big Maker Faire?
It's pretty big.
It's pretty big. Okay, because I wasn't sure if this one was counted as on the list of the ones. I see Bay Area. I see Austin. I didn't see Africa on that list.
Yeah, so the official Maker Faires are in the U.S., but there are also Maker Faires supported by O'Reilly all around the world. So,
hey, Mitch, hi, Mitch, it's Bernie in Philadelphia. Where in Africa is this Maker Faire going to happen?
In Cairo,
oh,
Egypt.
Oh, okay, in Egypt, all right.
Yeah, so a lot of exciting things, as we know, happening there, so it's really good timing to be there. And there are people actually starting a hackerspace there, and by doing this three-day one, we'll show people who go to the Maker Faire how incredibly cool it is to be part of this whole scene of people making and creating in supportive community.
Very cool. Amazing. So when is that again?
That's coming up in mid-October. So I forget the exact dates, but I'm leaving on October 1st to go there. Can I mention the Kickstarter?
Please do.
Yeah, so the Maker Faire Africa gave me and Bilal, I'm a co-founder of Hackerspace in San Francisco, Noisebridge, and Bilal is co-founder of Hackerspace in Ann Arbor, Michigan, All Hands Active. And he's also a documentarian. He's gone around the United States documenting the early days of the hackerspace movement. So we have a lot of experience in starting and supporting hackerspaces. So we got seed funding by Maker Faire Africa to do this three-day hackerspace and to show other people how to start hackerspaces there. And we need to raise the other amounts. And so we started a Kickstarter. And we're about halfway there. We've got about 2 weeks. And if you want to support us, you can search for Kickstarter Maker Faire Africa.
Maybe there are some listeners out there who don't know the concept of Kickstarter, and it might be a good time to kind of explain how that works. Anybody care to step up to the plate? Rob?
Yeah, Kickstarter is a really cool way to crowdsource funding for basically any sort of projects you can imagine. There have been books written, shows produced, events produced, and things like that. And what it is you put out a plan for what it is you want to do and what you want to fund. You put out a fundraising goal, and then you have a certain amount of time to raise that amount of pledges. If you manage to hit your goal, then the people who pledged get charged, you get the money, and you can do what you want to do. And if not, then nobody gets charged, nobody loses anything. So it's a great way to sort of put out your own independent projects. She's not here today, but our friend Gus and I recently did one for the media show, which is the media literacy show that we work on, and it went well. And it was very successful. It's a great way. There are like celebrities and all sorts of people now using Kickstarter to do what they need to do.
So you mentioned a three-city tour in Africa. What are the other two cities?
Oh, it's a three-day hackerspace, not three cities. Okay. So I'll just be in Cairo, but of course I'll have to see the pyramids and stuff too.
Yeah. So are there other hackerspaces in Africa?
There are very few in all of Africa. There's hackerspaces in pretty much all continents except for Antarctica. And
that's a mistake too.
Yeah, we need one down
there.
There
could be a hackerspace in Antarctica. I mean, what, there should be one on the moon.
There should be everywhere. Everywhere people want an opportunity to lead more fulfilling lives. So if there are people on the moon, we need more fulfillment there too.
Any hackerspaces in South Africa?
There's one in Durban, I think. Okay. But you can check on hackerspaces.org where they all list themselves, and you'll see a huge gaping hole of landmass, whereas like North America is obliterated by little pins where hackerspaces are, and same with Europe. So we need to get them in places where people really need them, like Africa.
Okay. Now, I don't know if we've talked to you after the Chaos Camp that took place in Germany this August. How did it rank as far as the various hacker events you've been to?
It was one of the best times of my whole life. I don't know how it ranked for you, but yeah, that was incredibly high. You know, I, with the help of a lot of people, set up a hardware hacking tent, which was the size of a small Kmart just about, and it was full almost the whole time of people lining up to learn to solder and make stuff, and people fixing projects that they brought there that didn't quite work out, and everyone helping one another. I even did a workshop with a popular request of a bunch of parents there. 24-year-olds learned to solder in one workshop towards the end of camp.
Well, by the time you reach 24, I guess you should know how to solder. It's about 24-year-olds learning to...
24-year-olds.
24-year-olds. Oh, wait, no, you're saying there were 20 individuals, all of whom were 4 years old.
Exactly.
And you were teaching them to solder?
Yeah.
A 4-year-old with soldering irons and soldering
guns. Lots of them.
Running around. Wow.
And a lot of them are now turning TVs off and enjoying the hell out of it.
Yeah, you know, I've heard the news reports about that. sort of an army of TV-begone people out there. Well, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Hey, also, we've had some listeners asking about the new TV Begone. Has it arrived in our shores yet?
Because it finally has. Okay. Just as of 3 days ago, the slow boat from China made its way to New York Harbor, and it's in my warehouse in New Jersey.
Okay, so those of you who are bringing lawyers to the station about the premiums, that you can just hold off a little bit. They're coming. We're going to send them to everybody who pledged for them. You're going to get them, and tell us how awesome they are.
They're totally awesome. They'll turn off TVs from 100 meters away, and they look like a smartphone. No one will ever know that it's something that turns TVs off. And you can make the world a better place everywhere you go.
100 meters for the Americans in the audience is almost 4,000 inches.
It's a football field of whatever kind of football you think of when you think of it.
And you can turn off the football game on the television set when someone thinks to turn that on. All right, well, speaking of smartphones, we have a very interesting story. And this is something you might have heard of. It actually was, I believe, in the New York Times today, among many other places. Now, I don't have a smartphone. I don't have an iPhone. I don't have any of that. But there are games. There are games that come out that people play. I hear about them. I hear about Angry Birds and various other things like that. But here's one. Here's an app that was released yesterday. And listen to this. This is a press release that actually was sent over to us. To the great surprise of its creators, a funny new iPhone game critical of Apple's human rights record was accepted by the iTunes Store and is being released today. That was yesterday. The app called Phone Story teaches players about abuses in the life cycle of the iPhone by putting them in the manufacturer's shoes. Okay? To win, players must enslave children in Congolese mines. Yeah, you look amazed, Mitch. Yeah, well, this is how your smartphone is made. You must catch suicidal workers jumping out of Chinese assembly plant windows. You must conscript the poorest of the world's poor to dismantle toxic e-waste resulting from obsolete phones. Sounds like a great game, right? Especially to play it on a smartphone. The seriously funny new game will sell for a certain amount. We're not going to give the price out over the radio. It would be in bad taste. But you can sell it on iTunes. Why did I say it that way? iTunes. All proceeds will go to organizations fighting to stop the horrors that smartphone production causes. Now, basically, this was put out by an organization called the Yes Lab. They set aside 40 days and 40 nights to reach their goal on the aforementioned Kickstarter. But with the help of various people that press releases were emailed to, they got there in just 5 days. 5 days, yes. This is from their press release. Since our fundraising appeal is doing so well, we're launching our very own curated page on Kickstarter to support other cool projects like Beautiful Trouble, an activism manual and website, written by over 40 troublemakers from around the world, including the Yes Men. Beautiful Trouble's goal is to put the best tactics for creative action in the hands of the next generation of change makers. Anyway, back to the whole phone thing. Would you like to force an African child to mine for precious metals at gunpoint? Phone Story, a new iPhone app produced by Mol Industria, puts the player in the unsavory shoes of a smartphone executive. Each level in the game explores a different real-life problem in the consumer electronics lifecycle. Slavery and abuse in coltan mines, suicide-inducing manufacturing plants, and health-destroying e-waste processing are reduced to a cute, low-res aesthetic driven by simple, addictive gameplay. And again, as we mentioned, that game was available in the iTunes store as of yesterday. Now, game developers Paolo Pedercini and Michael Pinsky said, "We wanted to get this story into the hands of consumers on the shiny devices we love to use but are causing this depraved, destructive cycle." The site provides links to organizations with campaigns to hold phone makers accountable for their horrors. 100% of proceeds go directly to such organizations. Now, Apple has a well-documented and controversial history of keeping apps that they don't agree with out of the hands of consumers. So it came as a big surprise to the creators when the iPhone store accepted this one. And according to Paolo Pedercini, if this simply slipped under their radar, we can't wait to see how they respond. If it's creative enough, we might have to build a whole other level. So, guess what? It did make it to the iTunes store, and then it was taken down. It was taken down, I guess, as soon as they realized what was going on. It was pulled from the iTunes App Store Tuesday, 11:35 a.m., only a few hours after its official announcement. Apple explained that the game is in violation of the following guidelines: apps that depict violence or abuse of children, apps that present...
Can I just interrupt you?
Yes, please.
And it's probably obvious to all of our listeners, but just in case some of them are not so bright, Apple has no problem selling you a telephone that is made in part due to the abuse of real children, the real abuse of real children. But once you've gone through this whole process and obtained the actual phone, they don't want you to see images of abused children.
That makes sense to me, yeah.
Even if it's fun.
Because it's on your phone, and people don't want to be reminded of bad things on their phones. But the other three items, apps that present excessively objectionable or crude content will be rejected. Apps that include the ability to make donations to recognized charitable organizations must be free, and the collection of donations must be done via a website in Safari or SMS. Now, we're going to be speaking with one of the coordinators in just a moment, but first I want to play some excerpts from the game itself as it appeared on a smartphone yesterday. Let's see if this actually comes up on our computer here. We have audio? Okay, I think this is working.
Joining us.
I'm sorry.
Let me tell you the story of this phone while I provide you with quality entertainment. Once upon a time, there were minerals resting in the bowels of the earth. One of these minerals, called coltan, is found in most electronic devices. The majority of coltan's world supply is located in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, a country torn by a brutal civil war. The increasing demand of coltan produced a wave of violence and massacres in the Congo. Military groups enslaved prisoners of war, often children, to mine the precious material. Directly or not, we are all involved in this complex illegal traffic. Like most electronic gadgets, this phone was assembled in China, inside a factory as big as a city. The people working there are constantly subjected to abuse and discrimination. They work in inhumane conditions and are forced into illegal overtime. Over the span of a few months, more than 20 workers committed suicide out of extreme desperation. We addressed this issue by installing suicide prevention nets. Then, you purchased this phone. It was new and sexy. You've waited for it for months. No evidence of its troubling past was visible. Did you really need it?
Of course you did. We invested a lot of money to instill this desire in you. You were looking for something that could signal your status, your dynamic lifestyle, your unique personality. Just like everyone else. You didn't meet the goal. Don't pretend you are not complicit.
Okay, that's the message you get if you quit the game early. There were some graphical images of people jumping out of windows, and you're supposed to try and catch them in nets. This particular part, which followed that, shows, I guess, a smartphone merchant, tossing phones at advancing consumers, and the goal is to point the phone at them and hit them with it so that they go away and go away with their smartphone. It's really an incredible thing to see this and to realize that it was on a phone even for a short period of time. Here's another part of the game.
Soon, we'll introduce a new model that will make this one look antiquated. And you will discard it. It will join tons of highly toxic electronic waste.
Okay, and that's the phone story right there. Now, joining us on the phone right now is Michael Panischke, one of the coordinators of Phone Story. Are you with us, Michael? Is Michael with us?
He was. Yes. Hello. How are you?
Ah,
today?
There you are. Okay. Hopefully, we didn't give away the entire game. Is there more to it, or is that the whole thing?
There's a little bit more to it. You showed those four levels, and you keep repeating, and the game gets harder and harder as new smartphones come out. And eventually it gets so difficult that you just can't win, and it maxes out.
Incredible. Now, tell us something about, before we get into Apple's reaction to this, something about the history, how this developed.
It was developed in the context of the Yes Lab, and there was a little bit of press about the Foxconn suicides, which we address in the game. And I was just sitting there, and I was thinking, wouldn't it be great if there was an app in which you had to save the jumping people jumping out of a factory from desperation of, you know, working 18-hour days, doing repetitive motion. So then the Yes Lab thought that was a good idea, and they hooked us up, or we hooked up with Mole and Asriya, and he started working on making it real. And so that's how it came into being.
Now, was the intention always to make this an app for the iPhone?
Well, yeah, well, a video game, and then, you know, that developed into we should also make it an app, and we should make it, you know, where we should distribute it.
Now,
that was the main goal, because it was, you know, it'd be perfect to have people holding the iPhone or the whatever smartphone that they have and looking at it and saying, "Oh my gosh, so this is where this comes from."
Well, now when I saw the release yesterday, you really seemed surprised that Apple had accepted it. Why do you think they initially accepted it?
I don't know. I mean, they shouldn't have. There's no reason why they shouldn't have accepted it. So we were just. We were just happy, so and then we weren't surprised when they banned it, but they saw themselves in it. They weren't mentioned by name directly. There was no Apple in the. There is obviously like a allusion to an iPhone or an iStore, but it's not. There's none of their logos. We don't say iPhone, so the terms of service that they said we violated are a little bit suspect.
Well, yeah, let's go over those quickly. Now, Mike has already objected to the. The rule that says apps that depict violence or abuse of children will be rejected. Ironic, because that's exactly how these phones are developed in the first place.
Yeah, that's a great point, yeah.
Uh-huh. Are there any other apps that they currently have that might fit that categorization of depicting violence or implying violence or anything like that?
Well, there's definitely a lot of, you know, war shooting games that they have out there, and they're pretty graphic. There's some more disturbing games out there, I think.
And those are perfectly okay as far as Apple is concerned.
You can shoot people in foreign countries as far as they're concerned, but you can't show what they do to get their materials.
Interesting. Now, the second point, apps that present excessively objectionable or crude content will be rejected. What does that even mean?
Yeah, that's really up to them, isn't it? So, yeah, that shows just what if it must be objectionable to them, but, I mean, they saw themselves in the game, so they found it objectionable. I mean, truth-telling is, nobody likes it when they're in power.
I think one of the things about these guidelines, and I'd never actually read them before, but I read them, after I heard about your game. They're really long, and a lot of them are really vague. Probably many of the apps that are currently in the store could be said, if you read one of the guidelines, to violate them. So it really gives them this sort of discretionary power to ban whatever they want. And I'm sure that's intentional.
Now, let's look at the ones involving donations. Apps that include the ability to make donations to recognized charitable organizations must be free. But in your app, correct me if I'm wrong, there isn't actually an ability to make a donation, correct?
Yeah, there's no direct action in the game. So it's just, I mean, we refer people to the website where we have more information about what they can do, and then we just pledged that we would take all the profits that we got and donate it to organizations that fight this kind of stuff.
So somebody who made an app or a game or something for an iPhone said, by the way, for all the money that we make on this, we're going to give it to UNICEF or something like that. Apple, by this logic, would kick them off, saying that, you don't, you're making a donation and you're not making that, you don't have the ability to make that free or something like that, even though they're just saying what they're going to do with the money they make.
Yes.
Okay.
So they would, yeah. I imagine that they would do that. But
by that logic. No. And then the final one, the collection of donations must be done via a website in Safari or an SMS. I'm not even sure I understand what that means.
I think Safari is a proprietary web browser, and SMS is another way to donate via, I believe, text. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, all right, so tell us what happened. Yesterday you were up. I assume there were parties going on and all kinds of celebrations, and all of a sudden, how did you get word that they were taking it off? They sent you some kind of email or something?
Yeah, Paolo received, I believe he received a call, and then Paolo was the, from Ola Industria, he's the designer, and he made the game. He got a call and I believe an email which kind of outlined they gave them the four terms that they said he had violated. And he just made an announcement. So we're banned from the App Store now. So.
Now, did you find that when you initially released the game, was there a lot of interest, a lot of publicity in it? And then when it was kicked off, was there a lot more interest and publicity?
There was a little bit at the get-go, which was pleasing. And then when they banned it, of course, that's when it. Blew up, so.
Streisand effect.
Streisand effect, indeed. So, basically, Apple is helping publicize this game that they're banning by banning it in the first place.
Yeah, thanks.
Unreal. So, okay, so what are you guys going to do now?
Well, we currently have a version for the Android market that's out there and being well-received by more open-minded individuals, I suppose. Uh-huh. So they haven't banned us, and we've been there since this morning. So we'll see what happens there.
Okay. Well, do the Android apps get banned on the same criteria, or is it a lot harder to get banned?
I just believe they're a little more open thus far. So.
Uh-huh. Now, I know people here have Android phones. Anybody download the game yet? Mike, you have it?
Yeah, I have a copy.
You have a copy. Okay, yeah. Great. Have you played it yet? Did you win?
You know, so I downloaded it. It got released this morning, and I was at work today, and I downloaded it, and I launched it and started talking, so I had to, not do that at work.
People at work know that you're downloading games while you're working?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. But I look forward to playing it later this evening.
Okay, dot red.
Yeah, in my personal experience, it has appeared as if the Android market is a bit more lenient towards what's allowed in the market versus the Apple game application market.
Mm-hmm.
But also, phone companies can try to lock things out for their particular set of customers. So it's always possible that maybe some customers might be locked out and not others.
Now, Voltaire, I know you have an iPhone, and I understand that you've already started proceedings. To return your iPhone. Well, I'm sorry, but people need to know. You're going to be returning your iPhone and demanding a refund. And
yes, and replacing it with an equally problematic Android phone.
Yeah, that's an important point to make. Is that they're each as guilty as far as the evils of this game portray. But let me ask: is this something that any cell phone is guilty of, not just smartphones?
Yeah, there's some companies that are, oh, sorry, I don't know if you're asking me. There's some companies that are better than others, but yeah, it's for smartphones, basically.
Okay, what is it about smartphones that makes that unique?
Well, the factory part, a lot about source labor, but for the coal pan, a lot of that comes from the DRC, and then, other precious metals like tungsten and gold are all mined across the world in similar situations, they get all bought up by the big companies. So there's a problem, it's a systemic problem. So that's also what the game addresses, is kind of our world economic system and this kind of Chicago school policy that drives this ideology that we can just continue living at a ridiculous pace, destroying the environment and people.
Why is this coltan? Why is that essential for smartphones? Or is it?
Coltan, I am not sure. They use it, I believe, in the processor. Right? I'm not sure.
Emmanuel, I know the answer to that question.
Well, go ahead, Bernie.
Coltan is a mineral which exists not only in the Congo but in other places, but a lot of it's mined from there. It's used in the manufacturing of tantalum capacitors, which are used not only in smartphones but in laptop computers, desktop computers, TV sets, automobiles, and as Michael does, as the game does point out, in virtually all consumer electronics products. I mean, I would argue that smartphones use a lot less coltan in them than a laptop computer or a desktop computer or a TV set, because there's smaller and fewer tantalum capacitors in a smartphone. I mean, it's good to educate consumers about this, and it is a real problem.
Are they disposed of at the same rate as smartphones?
Well, that's a good question. But I would just again argue the mass of tantalum capacitors in a smartphone is probably small compared to that of a laptop computer or TV or computer or desktop computer, or even a car that has a lot of computers in it. And people do retire their smartphones every couple of years or so, but people also get new laptops and other consumer electronics products on a fairly rapid cycle. So, I don't think we should be focusing on smartphones. I think we should be talking about the use of, tantalum and other materials in consumer electronic products in general, don't we? Shouldn't we?
For people who are interested in the topic, particularly of coltan, I just actually this week watched our friend Bicycles Mark's talk. He gave a talk at the Chaos Camp about a project called Fairphone, which is trying to mine these minerals without torturing anyone. And so if you go to his website, which is citizenreporter.org, you can learn a lot more about the topic.
Bernie, I just want to point out that there are also quite a few more of these phones, and as you said, the life cycle is a bit shorter. Some countries, people have phones more so than they would have a computer at home or a laptop or something. So.
True.
Well, that's true, but I would also like to agree with Bernie on this. I feel that the issue really is our obsession with having as many things as possible and as cheap as possible, so we end up, our entire electronics industry ends up being based on slavery in various parts of the world. These cell phones might be recycled quicker, but if you do have other things that are larger, then you have to say, well, what is the ratio and how do enough of these devices get recycled to, exceed it? And even still, it's still bad that your TV depends on this.
Mitch, go ahead.
Yeah, and as was pointed out in the narrative in the game, a lot of money has gone into manipulating all of us into desiring things we don't really want or need. And I also want to point out that, there are certain chemicals that are definitely toxic waste when you throw these things, any electronics, away, but it's a matter of degree. There, depending on the design, things can be designed to minimize that. And also, where you manufacture has a huge amount of difference. So Foxconn, where Apple makes all of the iPhones, is the most notorious for horrible treatment of people. And it really is true that the solution to people committing suicide out of desperation was to put nets in the way of people jumping and hitting anything hard.
So that's real.
That's real.
Michael, that really happened in China.
Yeah, that's. I mean, we saw that news story, and we thought, people need to know about this, and that's how the game started.
So what I find incredible is we mentioned people throwing out electronics all the time. Why don't people hold on to electronics or at least give them to somebody else that might not have any electronics? I mean, I've been carrying the same phone around for many years. I know people who hold on to technology, who collect old computers. And it's fascinating. It's interesting. It doesn't always have to be about having the fastest or the best. Sometimes just having some bit of technology is really kind of cool.
Well, a lot of money goes into manipulating all of us into buying things we don't want or need. It's glitzy, it's fancy, it's sexy, as was pointing out in the narrative of the game. But, you know, all the media surrounding us is telling us that we're defined by these things that we buy, and we're totally uncool if we don't have them, and we're totally uncool even if we have them and they're old. And we buy that on some deep emotional level.
Mm-hmm. Red Hack, you're here.
Yes. I just wanted to mention the talk that Mike mentioned by Bicycle Mark. If anyone wanted to look up the video of it, it's called Is This the Mobile Gadget World We Created? Okay. I went to it too, and it was pretty interesting. So
cool.
It's worth watching.
And that was from the Chaos Camp that we've been discussing. Now, Michael, let me ask you. Okay, so we've brought up all these issues. Maybe people listening are hearing about it for the first time and realizing that, yeah, they're complicit as well. What can people do at this point?
Well, currently, I mean, for each level in the game on our website, there's a little tab, and it kind of at the bottom it talks about things that can be done and groups that are doing things about it. So there's different for conflict minerals. There's different groups like enoughproject.org, and they work with on direct action, getting Congress to pass conflict mineral legislation. And there's problems with that, but that's, you know, there's also a lot of good that can be done. And then there's workers' organizations groups for the Foxconn level, and then there's all kinds of stuff about, like you were talking about the Chaos Camp, about anti-consumer or media manipulation. We have some stuff about that, and then recycling. There's a little bit of stuff about how you could recycle the phones better, or electronics.
And tell us where your website is.
PhoneStory.org is the phones, the game's website.
PhoneStory.org. Go ahead, Mitch.
Yeah, so I also wanted to point out that, you know, by consumers pressuring manufacturers, they do not need to manufacture at places as bad as Foxconn. There's a whole gamut, a whole range of different ways that people are treated at manufacturers in China. So TV Begone that I make is made in a manufacturer in China, and I chose the one that I chose because they treat their people really well. There's even a chef that makes food for these people, the food that they want. They get paid really well. They're trained really well to make higher quality, and they don't want to lose their investment. So people, there's so many contract manufacturers in China, people can quit one and go to another. So they want to keep the people that they have. And there are a bunch of places that treat their people well. They're in a minority, but they're there. And the difference in price is so little. The difference in price between this rock bottom kind of a place like Foxconn and the place that I chose is maybe 20 cents per unit. And for me, that is incredibly worth that 20 cents. I'm making a product that I make to make life better for people and not at the expense of others. And other manufacturers, other companies can choose to do the same. And if enough consumers pressure the companies, then they can choose so also.
Mitch makes a really good point, because based on the designs of our devices shows where our priorities are. If we really care more about human rights than, say, 20 cents for you know, what the example he gave, you know, we can easily try to make that switch. You know, the fact that if people really care about this, they should try pressuring people, because, you know, there's no reason why our lives, what some of these devices need to be based on such horrific things.
Emmanuel.
Go ahead, Bernie.
I just want to say it's a complicated problem, because unless a manufacturer or a contractor who contracts with a manufacturer also looks deep into the supply chain as to where they're sourcing their semiconductors from, and in this case, for instance, their tantalum capacitors, where those tantalum capacitors are coming from and where their distributors are getting them from, and where the manufacturer, I mean, it goes all the way back to the manufacturer of the tantalum capacitors, and where they buy the materials from on a day-to-day basis, from which mines, in which countries. I mean, it's a really complex problem. So it may be more effective, really, to, or at least part of the way to solve this problem is to look at the source, where the problem is actually happening in the mines of Congo and places like that, and try to address the problems at their source.
Yeah, and I think what Mitch mentioned about the 20 cents per unit cost to get a better place that treats its workers well, I think it says a lot that the larger companies that are just looking at the numbers and not looking at the human cost, that saving that 20 cents is worth it to them to deal with somebody like Foxconn. And it says a lot about the people in charge of the large companies that are in charge of a lot of what we do.
We're speaking with Michael Pineschke. Am I pronouncing your name right, Michael?
It's close to Pineschke, but yeah.
Okay, Pineschke. You're one of the coordinators of the Phone Story app that appeared for a brief time yesterday on iPhones, iTunes. What happens if somebody bought the app? I don't have an iPhone, so I don't know how it works. But if somebody purchased that app, did it get wiped from their phone, or do they still have it?
They still have it, yeah. So they have a pretty rare collector's edition and game.
Now, can they beam that to other iPhones? Can they share it with other people?
I'm not sure if they can. I suppose if people know how to jailbreak them, I imagine they could share with each other.
Uh-huh. Now, you've gotten all kinds of publicity. You're in the New York Times today. What kinds of other media attention have you gotten?
We've gotten quite a bit of positive reviews and mentions. I think Wired picked us up, Gizmodo and a couple of other guys, The Guardian, Washington Post, and a lot of blogs, and I guess are talking about it and reposting, which is great.
And no official reaction from Apple?
No, not really. I think they haven't officially commented on anything except for, no comment. They violated the terms of service, and I think that's all that they have really said to anybody.
See, what I find interesting here is that Apple is no more guilty than any other manufacturer of smartphones, but their reaction makes them seem guiltier by being so restrictive and judging of something that might be a little bit critical of how they do something. And I think that's a lesson that I think a lot of entities can learn.
I disagree with you just slightly, Emmanuel. I think in the issues raised by the game, the mining and the manufacturing conditions and the marketing, you're right to say that Apple is no worse than any of the other manufacturers of telephones. But I think there is actually a substantive difference between Apple and most of the other companies in their censorship practices. And while it's not directly something that the game points out, it's important as well.
I thought that's what I said, that they basically judge more than say...
But it's not just... It's not just this one game that they reject. They have a whole division of their company
right.
That's devoted to censorship.
That's the point I'm trying to make, is that they are judging more than others. They're being more restrictive. I think you agree with me.
All right.
You just don't know it. Okay. taking phone calls, 212-209-2900. We're speaking with Michael Pineschke, who is one of the coordinators of Phone Story, which it's available for Android. Is it available for laptops at all? Even laptops are guilty in this as well.
Not as of yet. I'm not sure what we're going to do with that, but we'll see. It might be.
I think you may have really opened up a Pandora's box here. There's going to be a lot of demand for this. I'm sure there'll be a movie coming along. I mean, I'm not kidding. This is a story that needs to be told. People need to know what goes into the manufacturing of these things that almost all of us carry around.
Michael, a lot of developers that have been banned from the App Store have turned to the Cydia store, which is the store for basically that it's not run by Apple, it's for jailbroken phones. Have you considered that as a place to put this app so that people with iPhones that are not controlled by Apple can get it?
Yeah, we've gotten some emails about that, and we're thinking about that. So yeah, we've thought about it, and we're considering it.
Okay, well, I think you'll find the community has a lot of support for people who say controversial things and get silenced as a result of saying controversial things. So I assume you're looking upon this as a positive thing overall, that the word is getting out.
Yeah, no, it's definitely that's the goal. I mean, the more people that are talking about this, the more chances we have of hopefully it changing.
Okay. We're going to take some phone calls. You're welcome to stay on with us. I'm not sure what your time restraints are.
Not sure. I could probably stick around for
okay. We're on for about another 17 minutes or so. So let's take some phone calls, 212-209-2950. And we do ask that people stick to the topic. I know there's all kinds of issues out there, all kinds of things going on in people's lives, but let's stick to this topic for now, and hopefully we can address other issues at a future time. 212-209-2900 is our phone number. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh, dear. Well, that person was on the phone, and all the other ones have gone away. Okay, here's a line. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yep.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Fuck you, Monroe. Fuck you.
Okay. Wonderful. Let's try this one over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi, Emmanuel. How you doing? I had a Verizon cell phone question for you.
Okay, that's exactly what we ask people not to do, is talk about things that are off topic. On topic, folks, 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Fuck you, Monroe. Fuck you.
Okay, we have one idiot out there. We might have to screen calls. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi, what's on your mind? Speak up, please. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Please speak up.
Okay. Yeah, a question is, see, your guest, I think one of the panel or your guests mentioned earlier that Apple, they pump a lot of money into getting us to buy these products. And one is at a loss here because you can't really, I mean, if they're spending all the money on getting us to buy these products, we can't really turn away from them. And it's like we're shooting ourselves in the foot anyway. How does one, I mean, Apple is such a huge organization. One can't really go against them. And they're actually showing that in what they do now.
Okay, so let's let Michael answer that question while you land your spacecraft. Good evening. All right, go ahead, Michael.
Well, I mean, that's why we saw that happening, that they're the planned obsolescence, the perceived obsolescence. So we tried to address that, the whole kind of cycle of it, because that produces more demand. So we hope that this will have a little bit of an impact culturally. That's why I mean, talking about it is the best way. I don't think they're exactly a horrible giant. They're not going to, you know, they're not shadowy. You know, we can get them to change.
Yeah. Can I ask a personal question? Do you have a smartphone yourself?
I do. I do have a Droid.
So you're complicit.
Talk to my family.
You're as complicit as anyone.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of a relief, I guess. But we're in this together. Walter.
You're also complicit, Emmanuel.
I'm complicit, too, but I'm not as complicit because my phone is so old, I have not replaced it in a generation. And, and I don't throw them out. I save all my phones.
Yeah,
I have an entire room devoted
to produce them.
That's true, but at least they're not being dumped in landfills because they're all the landfills in my own house.
In other words, you have toxic waste polluting your entire home.
Yeah, and I think that's how it should be. Rob.
I should point out in Michael's defense that it's kind of difficult to develop smartphone applications without a smartphone.
That's the point, yes. All right, let's take another phone call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi.
Hi.
Good evening. I've just been listening to your show, and you were talking about a device that would allow you to turn the TV off.
Okay, yes, technically that is something we discussed tonight, so we'll permit that. Mitch Altman here is the inventor of a wonderful device called TV Begone, which I think sort of fits along the theme of what we're discussing here tonight. Mitch, you want to tell this caller something about that device?
Yeah, well, that's what it does. It has one button. It's just a remote control with one button. I got rid of all those silly buttons that most remote controls have, like channel up and channel down, leaving the only important button, which is, of course, off.
Also created a similar device that could turn off I've noticed that people are taking a lot of pictures of other people, and I wondered if there's a button that would allow you to turn off the camera of various.
That's an interesting thought. Or maybe erect a big black bar in front of your head or something like that.
There kind of is. You can do it electronically. So with the same technology as TV Begone, which is just blinking an infrared light, an invisible light that the TV receiver can receive, you can have a bunch of those. And people in UK, a lot of activists in the UK, where there is a big problem with surveillance cameras everywhere you go, they've created hoodies with a lot of infrared LEDs around the perimeter of the hoodie, And anyone seeing you in person, they don't see anything but you wearing a hoodie. But the cameras see bright flashing lights that obliterate your face, which make it so that software can't recognize you.
Mitch, since inventing the TV Be Gone, how many You Should Make an X Be Gone suggestions have you received?
I do get a lot of requests. And, you know, the thing is, you know, I played my part, and I hope other people will play their parts. So we all have to play our part in making the world a better place as we see it.
Have you ever been the victim of your own invention where you're trying to watch something on television and someone turns it off thinking they're funny?
I don't have a TV.
Well, what if there's a documentary about the making of the TV Be Gone? Wouldn't you want to watch that? And wouldn't you be highly annoyed if somebody kept turning it off?
You know, if someone really thought that it was a public place, they were going out of their way to be at a public place, and no one was watching the TV, no one leaves their home to watch TV except for sports
okay,
bars.
Let me tell you something. We were walking around the streets of Dayton, Ohio a couple of years ago, and this gives you a sense of your TV Gone has gotten much better since then. But we were walking around, and we were able to turn off TV sets in people's houses as we were walking down the street. I know that's horribly obnoxious. And to make it even worse, it's a toggle switch, so it's on-off. We were able to turn people's TV sets on. They're sleeping peacefully upstairs, and then they come down, and the TV is on. Yeah, I can only imagine what goes through their minds.
Well, you know, when you create a tool, there will be people such as yourself who use it for whatever they feel like it.
we can't help ourselves. It's just the nature of it.
I really just wanted one for me, and because you know I can get rid of a TV in my own home, but when I go to public places and they're popping up more and more and more and more, and no one's really even wanting them on, and you know you can't turn them off, but you know now you can, and it just turned out that more and more people wanted them. And what people use them for is, you know, it's up to each individual.
Okay. Red Hat, go ahead.
I actually remember once, back when the TV Be Gone first came out, I'd never kind of noticed how the ubiquity of TVs in public places. And shortly after we had discussed it, I guess for the first time, I went to a shoe store, I think, and they had like 6 plasma displays showing, I don't know, something. And I said, why is this necessary? You know, what is the point of this? All it's doing is wasting energy, and nobody's looking at these televisions. And so I think, you know, with this, not only does the TV Gone give you the ability to shut off TVs, but it makes you more aware of the fact that there are all these things all over the place.
So. Yeah, and that was certainly my intent, is to have a fun way to bring up these kind of things, because people have been really frustrated without even being conscious that they were frustrated until having a way to think about it, such as TV Be Gone. And, you know, if I get in the middle of a Union Square on a soapbox and start saying, turn off your TV, then everyone's just going to ignore me. But if I give some device, a tool that makes it fun to turn off TVs, well, that's another story.
Well, I sense a common theme between what Mitch is doing, what Michael and his friends are doing with the game. And that's making people aware, making people think, and kind of breaking some bad habits. And I sure hope that that's what all of this results in. Comment from Dot Red, then we're going to take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. Again, we do have one idiot out there at least, so the more calls that come in, the more of a buffer we have against that kind of a thing. Think of it as sort of like a united front against stupidity. Go ahead, Dot Red.
Yeah, the connection between the TV Be Gone, what we've just been talking about, and this smartphone game is actually very strong, because we were just talking about how we're bombarded with all this information of buy this, buy that, and a lot of times that's done by having these huge plasma displays or useless TVs pointing out of the windows, trying to just throw commercial information at people whenever possible, and this is really a very interesting and creative way at trying to combat that.
Okay, yeah. Rob.
And in a world full of all these gimmicky gadgets, I think it's there's something very beautiful about using these gadgets to question the place of these gadgets in our lives.
All right, let's try to take some phone calls, and hopefully I get the right one here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Yeah, someone had mentioned there was a manufacturer of televisions in China that had pro-labor practices.
Okay, yeah, I think that was that you, Mitch?
Well, I didn't talk explicitly about that. I don't know of anyone that have pro-labor, but, you know, in China, it's a very capitalist place, perhaps paradoxically, maybe even more than us. So people do things because it's profitable, and there are a lot of places that try to compete through quality, And also through actually doing things the right way to attract Western businesses to use them, as opposed to using places like Foxconn that have such a terrible reputation. But their prices are so low that corporations such as Apple find it irresistible to use them, so they can save a few cents per unit. And the more corporations or individuals that choose to manufacture anywhere in the world, including China, who choose based on human rights and human conditions and safety practices and environmental abuse or the lack thereof, the more people who make choices positively in that way, the better. And then other companies are going to try to do the same to compete with ones that are doing it. So there, you know, I came to New York to give talks at Maker Fair, which is happening this weekend, and Open Hardware Summit, which is happening Thursday. And part of my talk in Open Hardware Summit is to tell people you, an individual, can manufacture. And one of the things you can use as a criteria for who you choose to manufacture is, how do they treat their people? How do they treat the environment? These are things we can choose as people hiring companies who make these things.
Can you actually say the name of the company that's, I guess, more humane in their practices and that was mentioned?
The company that I use is called Etonnet.
Spell that?
Etonnet. And it's based in San Rafael, but they have places in Shanghai. The place I initially used is called CompuTime. They used to be horrendously awful. They got busted for it, and they cleaned up their act. And I found them after they cleaned up their act, and they're great. They're the world's largest manufacturer of remote controls, so it was only apt that I use them.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for the info. I hope that answers the question.
I guess you don't have any information on who these manufacturers' ultimate clients are. If there are name brands I can go to the store and buy that are made in, you know, these slightly more ethical factories, I guess that's something that's a lot harder to research.
Well, I know, like, for just remote controls, All-in-One is a huge remote control manufacturer, and they're made by CompuTime.
Well, that sounds like a list that someone or a group should start compiling, because that would be another good way to help put, you know, demand pressure on which companies do good and which companies do bad.
Oh, yeah, and we can also look online and see which manufacturers use Foxconn, which is notoriously horrible. And does your game point that out, Michael?
Or Foxconn in particular?
Yeah, or any of the ones that you know are notorious.
We mentioned Foxconn on the website, but in the game, it just talks about factory mostly.
Yeah, well, if there's a list of corporations that use places like that, that's a way that people can be aware of it and then use that in part of their choice for what they may want to buy.
Now, Mitch, you mentioned that you're going to be at Maker Faire. That's coming up this weekend. We did a show on it last Wednesday. This weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at the former World's Fair grounds, the New York Hall of Science.
Hall of Science, yeah.
And what are you going to be doing there?
Well, I'm going to help Alpha One Labs, Hackerspace here, set up a hardware hacking area where we'll teach thousands of people, anyone who wants to, how to solder and how to make cool things.
Teach more four-year-olds in New York now how to solder?
Oh, yeah. At Maker Faires, we've taught three-and-a-half-year-olds.
Oh, boy.
You know, anyone can learn if they want to. It's super easy skill, and it's a lot of fun, and it's useful. And you can make way cool things with it. It's very empowering. You know, you can make something cool and bring it home and show your friends. One thing, too, I found out just like 3 days ago that they're going to give me an award on Friday night, which actually I'm still way overwhelmed by.
Wow, that's going to be embarrassing. We'll be there.
Okay, and you can watch me cry on the stage.
In fact, a bunch of us are going to be there. The 2600 van, I believe, will be making an appearance. And all kinds of fun things will be happening. And if you want more information on that, makerfaire.com. That's spelled MakerFaire.com. Just look up the New York section. It takes place Saturday and Sunday out there in Queens. Now, Michael, I'd like for you to give out any information that people can use to either help you guys out or just get more information.
Well, yeah, I mean, check out our website. It's thephonestory.org. YesLab.org has info about what we're doing as far as all the new interesting hijinks and such. And then, yeah, our website has links, and then play the game with your friends. Talk about it.
Yeah, it's from what I saw, it looked pretty interesting. Disturbing, but very interesting as well. Now, is there a way people can make donations or help you guys out?
No, just we haven't set up anything. I'm not sure if we're going to, as far as donating directly to us. We just have the anything we make from the app, we're going to donate away. And anything that it's at a couple art shows, any of the money that they give us, we're giving directly to some workers' organizations or maybe like other projects that fight different levels. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's always an inspiration when somebody does something that wakes people up and gets the word out. So I want to thank you for doing that, and please keep it up and let us know if any new projects you're involved in.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. And one thing that we do need to announce, because we've been talking about this for some time. As you know, we have a history. We can't stop ourselves. We can't help ourselves. We have a history of holding conferences every couple of years. The last one was the Next Hope, and the one before that was the Last Hope. Okay, we're through confusing ourselves now. The new one is going to be called Hope Number 9. I'm embarrassed because I don't have anything in front of me that has a calendar, so I don't know. Does anybody have a smart device that... You have a, Gus, you're here, and you have a smart device that can tell you...
No, I know the dates because it's always right before my birthday.
Okay, what are the dates of Hope Number 9?
It is going to be the 13th through the 15th of July of 2012.
2012.
Yes.
13, 14, 15.
Yes.
Wait a minute. 13th, Friday the 13th? Have we thought
and
this?
Is it before the end of the world or after?
Well, it's before because the end of the world is the end of it's part of December. So yeah, we're safe as far as that goes. So more information will be posted at hope.net. But that is the plan. Hotel Pennsylvania. Yes, it will still be standing. We're told it will be July 13, 14, 15. Hope Number 9. Look for more information on that.
Yes, and follow Hope Number 9 with the numeral 9 on Twitter.
Hope Number 9 on Twitter. Okay, great. Write to us, oth@2600.com, and send us stories or any information you have. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Alrighty, you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM, also streaming on the web at WBAI.org. And don't forget to go to PCRadioShow.org because today is September the 14th, 2011, and it's Wednesday, 8 p.m. You know what that means? It's time for the personal computer shoe. All right, I'm back from Chicago and we're ready to go. All right, take it away.
Good evening, this is Joe King and welcome to the Personal Computer Show. Hank Key is with me in the studio, and very shortly from the West Coast we will be joined by David Perry. Before we get into tonight's show, Hank, and I'll do this again at the end of the show, I want to remind folks that next week we've got a very exciting show. Mark Rusinovich of Microsoft is going to talk with us about what the next 9/11 is going to be all about, who's going to attack us, and how.
And he will be on the air with us, and he has written a book about it. And
well, he's written a novel based on it, but he is also... A lot of people remember him from SysInternals. He's one of the top Windows technologists in the business. He wouldn't join Microsoft when they offered him a job, so they did it the next best way. They bought his company, and then he did work for Microsoft.
That is very interesting. You know, we're talking about security. One of the things that was announced this past week was that Apple is canceling all security updates for the PowerPC Max.
No. That is not the way to phrase it. When Microsoft did those things, we didn't say they were canceling. They said they were discontinuing.
Let me put it this way. If you happen to have a Mac that used the IBM PowerPC chip, there will no longer be security patches for the operating system you're using. And I think the latest one you can use is OS X 10.4. And you cannot upgrade because the upgraded versions require that you have the Intel chip. So my advice is, by the way, the Mac PowerPC ceased to be in the Mac in about 2006. So if you have a machine basically prior to 2000, all the way up to 2006, you have a machine for at least 5 years, so you got your money's worth out. It's time to buy a new machine.
Exactly, and nobody, well, I shouldn't say that. Microsoft generally goes longer than that. You know, they generally have a 10-year life cycle. Yeah.
Well, the other thing is that if you really do want to continue to use it, just don't connect it to the Internet. And you could use it in offline mode.
What's the Internet?
What is the Internet? Hey, you know, I have some sad news. Michael Sternhardt. You know who he is, right?
Yes, I do.
He passed away recently at a very young age, relatively speaking. And
yes, he was.
Why don't you tell the people who he is?
Well, before I do that, I'd like to welcome David Perry of Trend Micro to these microphones. David?
How do you do, gentlemen? I'm here in sunny Huntington Beach, California.
Lucky you.
I'm sure you heard what is going on in the world, and we're going to just start covering some of it for the benefit of our listeners.
All right.
How many of you, I want a show of hands, how many of you have ever used an e-book?
I'm using one as we speak.
Nope, don't.
Well, Stevie doesn't read. So
no, I do read, but I read the real books.
You read tree books.
I read books, yeah, tree books.
Dead tree edition.
Hank, do you have any bio on this chap you just mentioned?
Why don't you explain who he is, and then I'll see what I can find.
Well, okay? Who he is, how many of you have heard about a thing called Gutenberg.org?
Nope.
How many, I'm striking out because most of you won't know what I'm talking about, but this is the fellow who, in essence, invented or popularized the ebook, and he founded Gutenberg for public domain ebooks. Actually, Stevie, you could read ebooks all day and all night from now on until the time you die, and you won't finish the Gutenberg library.
Right.
And you owe a real vote of thanks to this guy because people came in when he first started digitizing public domain books and putting them into a format that could be read. You know, it was very primitive. It was just basic bits and bytes.
It's ahead of its time.
Way ahead of its time, Hank.
He started this process in 1971.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it was a one-man show, and it took time, and then other people started helping him.
How did he save it? If he started the process, he couldn't have saved it digitally.
Why not?
Yes, no, that's what he did.
We had computers then. We had computers back in the 50s.
Not personal computers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we had personal computers before
scanned them or what?
No, let's remember the Apple One.
Some of it he typed in. Typed in, scanning.
Some of it was scanned, some of it was typed. Most of it actually was typed because scanners were pretty expensive back then.
Well, typing man hours.
They were mainframes. I attended a lecture that the AA gave back in 65. On hypertext.
Why don't we get him on the air?
And he's dead.
He passed away.
And that's what we're doing. Yeah, we're giving his obituary.
Yeah, he was born in 1947 in Tacoma, Washington.
I did hear you say that.
And it's a sad passing because he is truly a pioneer. Yes, he is. 64 is young these days.
Well, Michael Hart. It is gone, but Gutenberg Project is still with us, and ebooks certainly are still with us, and we owe him a vote of thanks, not just for Project Gutenberg, but for the whole concept of popularizing ebooks.
I mean, today, anyone who handles a Kindle or a Nook, it all originated with the ebook concept, and he had vision. By the way, David, I understand that there is a late-breaking story that you want to let us in on.
It's really not so much a breaking. Well, we've been working with law enforcement on this, and frequently.
Wait. Who is we?
Trend Micro.
Oh, okay. And law enforcement is who?
Our research department, and by law enforcement, I mean the FBI.
Oh, okay.
So what happened?
Okay. And we've been tracking a Russian hacker who calls himself Soldier. And there's a couple of things that are interesting about this. He went out and bought crimeware. He bought crimeware on the criminal underground. He didn't write it himself. He's not a hacker. And then he went out and leased criminal trafficking and stolen network nodes and used all of that purchased stuff to send out an attack using the Zeus SpyEye Trojans. And he infected 25,000 people so far, since January of this year. But what's interesting is, as a corollary to this, he apparently has infected many of the Fortune 500 companies, and I cannot name names. Okay, this is still...
When you say he infected the companies, did he infect their servers, or did he infect just individuals at the companies?
He has access to their networks. What that means precisely, I do not know. But apparently he's been able to use the Zeus SpyEye Trojan not only to steal millions of dollars, currently at about 17 grand a day. And realize,
that's pretty good pay, Stevie.
For one guy, yeah. That's a lot of money.
Well, let me ask you, has he been apprehended?
No, not yet.
Do you know who he is?
I don't personally know who he is, but people know who he is.
Do people who know who he is, are they getting cooperation from both sides of the ocean?
I believe they're just about to pounce, and that's why we're able to talk about this.
Okay.
Yeah, it takes a long time to set up international cooperation on this. But so the funny thing is, networks have been compromised.
Funny what you just said. You just said it takes a long time to set up international cooperation. Hell, man, have you looked at what's going on in Washington? It takes a long time to set up any cooperation.
Well, no. There is no cooperation at all in Washington.
Oh.
That's the contention.
Maybe we could get Interpol involved down there.
In Washington?
Yes.
They wouldn't want to go there. It's dangerous.
Okay, Hank.
Yes, by the way, a nice story is that HP had made an announcement that anyone who bought their touchpad prior to their $99 special or $149 special, you know, depending on how much memory you have, they're going to make good on making the, you know, in other words, if you pay $399 or you pay $499, they will make up the difference and refund the money back to you. That is... Joe, that's a good company policy.
If it's a good company policy, but it's a good policy.
It's a good PR, and you know what?
Well, it's good for the people.
Well, you know, as you said, they're the number one PC company, and you have to maintain
they may have said that they're going to spin off or sell off the PC division of HP, but HP Computing is not going out of business,
no,
and they want
not.
To maintain their name and their reputation.
So I think that's a good one. The next story I have is Intel, and I have mixed feelings on this. You know, last week I talked about the Ultrabook and some of the requirements to be called an Ultrabook. One is that it's got to be less than 0.8 of an inch. In other words, about 3/4 of an inch, and that the other factors. Well, what Intel has done is that they have they've been working with a fiberglass company to come up where the body, instead of magnesium alloyed aluminum and so on, which is really metal stiff, they're going to start using fiberglass because they can save $10 on the unit. I'm saying to myself, are we dumbing down the process of the manufacturer now that now it's going to be plastic?
I don't say it's dumbing down. They're going for something else entirely. But, you know, we talk about this whole thing, and it brings me to mind of a conversation and discussion I heard last week. And I at the moment prefer not to tell you who it was about. But one chap said to the other, I would like to sell you one of the netbooks I'm making, but it's got a broken keyboard, it's got no USB ports, it's got limited connectivity, and it can't do most of the things that your netbook can do. What's it worth?
Nothing.
And the guy, his friend said nothing like you did, Hank. And he said, that's funny because I'm selling a hell of a lot of those iPad 2s.
but you know what? I just really feel that the fiberglass, I've seen it, you know, like cameras used to be metal. Now it's a fiberglass. I'm seeing it. I don't know. I happen to like metal, and I just like the fact that you know that it's got that stiffness, it's got that firmness. Well, we'll see how you know.
And you know, Hank, they're making airplanes out of fiberglass now.
Not the motor.